Tuesday, December 12th, 2006, upon further review, episode number 27. For the 27th consecutive time, we bring you opinions, suggestions, ideas, concepts, humor, fun, and joy. We're so consistent, it's just a little disturbing.
Let's do this.
Upon further review, I'm Greg.
I'm Clea.
Welcome, everyone out there, to episode number 27 of Upon Further Review, and we've got a big show planned for you. I was thinking about this the other day. There's a sports radio show that I listen to. They always start out that way. Even if it's a really sucky show, you know, they're always just like, we got a big show planned.
Well, presumably they say it in the beginning before they know whether or not it's going to be a sucky show.
Well, but I mean, then they're basically borrowing against a lie, right? I mean, as far as they know.
Well, they have high hopes and big plans.
I guess so, but they get disappointed many times is my point. But anyway, well, we'll try not to disappoint you in this particular show. And we want to thank everybody, as always, for coming in and giving us a listen. And we want to thank Wesley from Planet Retcon Radio for stopping by to comment and correcting our two mistakes. First of all, the Planet Retcon Radio podcast won a Parsec Award, not a Podcast Peer Award. My apologies. I knew it was some P, so congratulations on that. And then also wanted to point out that they actually have a feed that is everything but bloopers, not just bloopers, which is what I thought it was. But as I pointed out in my response to the comment, if you did come up with a show that was just bloopers, I would have been fine with that. So I just want to point that out. We're cool here at Upon Further Review with bloopers. Okay? That's totally fine with us.
So, oh, and I listened to all of the Stargate cafes.
Yeah. So, and did it confirm that you still like it?
Yeah, it was okay.
Okay, so we want to thank them. We're glad that we liked the review. And we want to thank all of you for submitting a bunch of stuff for review. We've gotten quite a backlog.
They're still all podcasts.
I know. We keep saying, like, if you have other things you'd like us to review, and everyone's just like, anyway, podcasts? So, I mean, everyone likes listening to the other things. It's just that they only want to submit podcasts. That's fine. You know, whatever you guys want, we're here for you. But if you do want to submit other stuff to us, we're certainly willing and able to take on all comers. So please keep those things coming. We have kind of a Christmas-themed show today. Day, babe.
No, we don't, actually.
We do.
No, we don't. We just have one Christmas item.
Okay.
It's not a theme.
Christmas tree themed first half
there's
of the
no
show.
There's no theme.
Okay, there's no theme.
We're reviewing Christmas trees.
For Bernadette's sake, I'm trying to get some themes out there, but we don't have a theme. Okay.
Well, so there's a she's not going to appreciate it
I know,
if you just
she's
pull
be like,
one,
you're
you
just
know,
trying to set
nowhere.
It up, aren't you? So we're going to be leading off by talking about Christmas trees. Then second, we're going to take a look at Jon Stewart's The Daily Show, which is on Comedy Central. And
he's Jewish, so all you Jewish listeners...
That's going to compensate for the Christmas
out, yeah.
tree thing? Okay. And then for the people who are Kwanzans, or
oh,
for people
shoot.
Who are the Zoroastrians, or basically anybody else, Hindu, Buddhist, we have
next
nothing.
Show, sorry,
yeah,
we don't have
we'll
enough
cover
time.
It eventually. You give us time, we'll get there. But in any case, the third thing that we have on the docket is a review of the Light On, Light Through podcast by a guy named Paul Levinson, who's a very interesting guy. He submitted this to us for review, and we'll have a lot to say about that when we get there. But first, we have to lead off with the Christmas tree. On you go with the Christmas tree.
I like Christmas trees.
Okay, our review of that outstanding. Well, we got through 27 shows. We rule. I'm glad you like Christmas trees. Well, so why don't, maybe you should explain the
okay,
impetus
so there's a
this.
History
okay.
of the Christmas tree.
Yes.
Even semi-pagan. I think that's cool.
Okay.
I think closely tied into the spirit of Christmas,
mm-hmm.
if not represents the spirit of Christmas for many people,
mm-hmm.
because it's a symbol that you put up and you take down,
mm-hmm.
and it brings people together, and it can be a holiday tradition that brings the family together.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. From that, we get into whether or not if you have a Christmas tree, does it have to be real or can be fake?
Right.
And real trees, we have www.christmastree.org,
yes.
which is for the National Christmas Tree Association.
Yes.
They are pro-real tree.
Yes.
And even have a fun game for kids where kids have to kill the mutant fake trees.
Well, hit them with a snowball. It's actually called Attack of the Mutant Artificial Trees.
Right.
And you need to hit the trees with a snowball and not hit the elf.
And the little elf will say things like... Yeah.
Trees are good for Christmas.
You know, Christmas is only with real trees.
Fake trees are bad. Just picture like the Munchkins on speed with mutant trees, and they'll be good. We represent the real trees.
And then there's the huge world of fake and artificial trees, which is quite fun.
Yes.
I had a friend actually who grew up with an inflatable tree. And she, to this day, thinks quite fondly of inflatable trees.
The inflatable tree.
Greg grew up with the what we standard think of artificial trees.
We had a real tree once or twice. The experience was not good. And then we ended up with an artificial tree. And that artificial tree was a part of my childhood. It was a friend. A little emotional right now.
And what were the negatives for you of the real tree, the handful of times you guys got it?
Besides the fact that it created its imminent death...
It created its own death?
No, the buying of it, I mean. You know, you'd be like, oh, it's wonderful, it's Christmas, and soon it will die. Besides that, the fact that it was messy because the needles would fall off the tree, especially as it got dry.
Did you have to clean it?
I think I ended up having to pitch in and do that. We had to vacuum. It was a total mess. Our dog at the time, our beagle, Trilby, got sick because of the needles on the ground. But there was all that. There was having to get it out the door, which created a whole new shower of needles on the way. There was the fact that there was the danger of fire hazard because real trees have a tendency to get dried out. So unless you continually keep them misted, and I know everybody says, well, you can remember to do that. Well, yes, okay, but it's Christmas, right? Christmas is not the time when everyone's working at optimal efficiency. There's a trillion things going on.
Yeah, and so also don't leave the lights on.
Well, right.
When you're not there.
And you wouldn't do that. But I mean, then basically you keep them on for like 15 minutes while you're in the room and then leave, because that's what I'm talking about. Especially with the older brand of lights, you know, there was a fire hazard associated with that you wouldn't get with the plastic trees.
Great, it's old.
And then, yeah, exactly. The ancient days of the 80s. So there was that. And then on top of that, you also had putting ornaments on them. There was always the concern of sap. They could be sticky sometimes because they're real trees.
Wait a minute. You just said as a negative that you had to put ornaments on them?
No. That it was difficult to put ornaments. On them. It wasn't
right, that was like part of the
tree.
Whole thing for people.
But our real tree didn't have pre-decorated ornaments. We decorated our artificial tree. That was non-decorated.
And you're saying it was easier than doing a real tree?
Yeah, because a real tree, like, the ornaments would fall off. So
that's because you just, I mean, that's okay. You just, you get the hang of it and then they stay on.
It's like doing the Jedi mind trick. No, the trees did not do what you said they did. The trees did not do what I said
they did.
No, they did,
but then you learned to deal.
Well, clearly we didn't, because the couple times that we did them, they were a pain. They just, you know. And also you have to remember, I had weird ornaments growing up as a kid. Like, I had this one that I got from my mom, which was I thought it was very cool because it was homemade, and it was George Washington crossing the Delaware with his troops. It was like a 3D image.
It was homemade.
It was like an image of like George Washington crossing the... But see, it had a Christmas ribbon around
it. It was homemade?
Yeah. It was it was like a...
There's a really funny...
So it was a little heavy.
The reference to previous show on homestarrunner.com, there's a new Strong Bad email where he talks about Christmas ornaments as gifts and how they're one of the worst gifts because it's like saying that I don't really know who you are and what you want. And also it's a gift that becomes obsolete as soon as you open it. And then they say how, like, an anti-gift is a Christmas ornament made by someone.
Yeah, see, I did that twice. And see, if I just had an artificial tree. Well, no, I mean, so basically after those first couple of years, we grew up with artificial trees, and we had that one artificial tree. And, you know, then later on, when I went away to college, you know, we had a little college dorm tree. And it was very nice. Another fake tree. Yeah, well, what am I going to do? Bring in a bonsai tree?
No, I'm just making sure people understand.
Yes, still a fake tree.
Fake tree.
And, of course, the good thing about this is that I had total over my, you know, life, I had basically one tree every 10 years, as opposed to 30 trees, which is what it would have taken if I was getting a new tree every single time. So I could have slaughtered a veritable forest of trees your equation, or I could have gotten the three trees that I ultimately did.
Did you eat vegetables and grains during those 30 years, Greg?
I certainly did.
So you slaughtered numerous vegetables and grains. Oh, did you eat meat, Greg?
Well, what's the point of that?
I don't plant cows, honey.
That's a silly argument.
The concept, Greg, which you know and are trying to avoid.
No, look,
is that it's no different to get a crop, because that's what these real trees are.
Argument.
They're a crop.
It's a silly argument.
That have families, in many instances, who are running these farms, you know, being true Americans.
True Americans, yes. They have a trees for troops thing, by the way, I say.
Right,
I'm sure
of course.
They're happy about
and I'm sure they bring a lot of
armor,
hope
but we
and
can
Christmas
give you some
spirit.
Here you go. Look, the point I would make is, and sorry, Drummond Electa,
you haven't
know,
made your
you
point
know,
already.
I understand, Drummond Electa. I apologize. No, but I mean the point is that you know from our perspective, it was easy and it was permanent
it.
And it didn't kill trees.
Got
that
it.
Was the idea.
Okay, so now the negatives for fake trees. One, you don't have the joy of going out and purchasing a real tree that is also part of the holiday spirit
of killing it.
They don't, and some people have the holiday tradition of going and cutting down their own tree, which
yes.
is also a joy for many people. They don't have that Christmas tree smell, which is very wonderful. I'm someone who loves smells as being a part of memories and about part of experiences, and fake trees don't have that. Also, fake trees are just another part of corporate America, fake, not real, artificial, and aren't really supporting, you know, farmers, which there aren't very many of, and I come from farmers, so that's important to me. Fake trees are made out of a vinyl product that is...
PVC plastic, which is one of the worst kind of non-recyclable or takes a non-biodegradable
right.
plastic.
So it's true that over, you know, his 30 years, he only, let's say, would need one or two trees, but every time you have to get rid of an artificial tree, it's just landfill. While real trees are recyclable, they can be turned into compost, they can be turned into little refuge for fish if you put them in a pond. Or you could get one that you can just plant. My dad and I did that 2 years in a row. We had the same tree. We bought one that could be planted, and during the rest of the year, we left it outside, and then we brought it back in the second year, and then my dad left it out and didn't take care of it, and it died. But that's a whole other story.
Boy, is it. So, yeah, I mean, and look, I mean, obviously, there are a lot of arguments to be made for the real trees. I still, beyond the environmental argument, I still think the argument of fire hazard danger and the argument of the mess, the disastrous mess that it creates, and the danger to our dog.
The fire
is
hazard,
an issue.
It goes both ways. If the needles come off the fake tree, and I'd much rather have her eat a real tree needles than a fake tree needles.
Yeah, but the point is that unless she goes out and like decides to start crunching branches, the fake tree branches are not going to fall off, whereas naturally the needles off a real Christmas tree will. I mean, like the couple times that we had a real tree, we had to have newspapers spread all over the place. I mean, it was like,
okay, first of all,
it
sounds like
it was like a bubble boy tree.
I'm going to hear
like,
this from your mother, but no offense, obviously, that you I'll put limit on your father. You didn't know how to handle real trees.
No.
We didn't have that problem.
My father grew up before there were artificial trees. My father grew up
before
there were trees.
Okay, well, obviously, you guys you're too smart, and so you don't know how to handle the stupid mundane things
like stupid people like me.
Of how to get a tree in so it doesn't spill all over the place.
It's not a matter of that.
Why would you need to use newspapers?
They're inherently messy because they're messy. Because
no,
if you don't get
we
rid
we never had to use a newspaper. There are tree...
You got lame trees.
Little... No, there
lame,
are trees...
needle
there are cloths
trees.
That you put on the ground.
Yeah, well, we used those too, but they always sort of spread over that amount. Plus, it didn't hold the ornaments well. And
anyway.
I think that the arguments that you've made are very good arguments. And the problem I have is that, and I will fully admit, like one of the things that annoyed me as we were going around doing a little bit of research for this topic is we were looking at all these different environmental sites. And there were things like, for example, Tree Hugger, which you can find at treehugger.com, treehugger.com, that explains, you know, what to deal with a Christmas tree. And of course, all of them, as environmentalists, all of them say more or less the same thing, which is, well, the best thing to do, of course, is to not use a tree at all. And then they say very helpful things like, perhaps you can tell people that the memory of how you're saving the earth will keep them warm this Christmas season. And I'm like, yes. And then they can go throw themselves on a sword because of how depressed they are. Please. Like, I am very much an environmentalist. I think Clea is as well. We've already expressed our political opinions on this show. But we also try to be reasonable about it. And there's a point where environmentalists go a little bit overboard also. We are also living on the earth. And to the degree that we are, having these memories, I think, is important. So, assuming that we have are going to have a tree, which, you know, Clea and I would like to do.
So far, we haven't gotten one. We're almost a half
because we've been having this discussion.
We haven't gotten there.
It's. I mean, I
understand. Please vote. Tell us what we should do.
I know you should vote. Like, seriously, I should put up like a poll. Should we get a real tree or fake tree? Because the problem is that I actually agree with you that probably the environmental reasons you're giving are sensible. My problem is just I have kind of an emotional thing, I guess. I kind of an emotional reaction against killing a tree. I mean,
the other stuff about vegetables and animals?
I was just about to respond to that. For the same reason that we have a pet but don't have a problem eating a burger. I mean, we always have distinctions and that we make. Like, why are we allowed to eat cat? You know, eating cow is okay, but having a dog is not. I mean, what?
You mean eating a dog?
Eating a dog is not okay, but you know, having a cow is fine. I mean, come on. Like,
what?
In all of those circumstances. So really the point is this, it's hypocritical looked at one way in any of these situations, okay? It's hypocritical to love our dog Lilo and yet eat other animals. But the point is that we can make a distinction based on the creatures that we've allowed in our lives and that we haven't. That we, you know, have said we're going to take the best care we can of this dog and that maybe someday we will become vegetarians, and it seems like that's a logical thing to do in many ways is become vegetarian for all the environmental and moral reasons and all that. But at the moment we don't do that and we're working on it and whatever.
No, don't say we.
I know you don't agree with this.
You're the one that will become a vegetarian in the future, not me.
The point about all of it is that there is some hypocrisy associated with that. There's hypocrisy associated in some ways with lots of things that we do in our life, but that doesn't mean that I don't have these reactions to things. And I always used to think that it was ridiculous to find this magical, wondrous thing that we were then going to throw out on the side of the road because, you know, it had basically outlived its usefulness. And the argument that, yes, it's going to it'll biodegrade and, you know, ashes to ashes and dust to dust, and it'll return to the earth, and it'll make
just think
moment.
Of it as Phoenix. You like that concept.
But I mean, but it's still, you've killed this tree. And the argument that the people make, by the way, that there's, you know, that, well, you just go out and cut this tree, and it, no. These trees are grown for the express purpose of being harvested, cut, and then used, okay? So there's not like some, like, rogue Christmas tree population that's invading our backyards that we need
but
to take
Greg,
out, okay?
On at least one or two times a year, you buy me cut flowers. It's the same thing. Exact same thing. And you've done it multiple times.
Well, I mean, yeah, but it's...
It's not different.
Well, but the flowers...
And I do see
there is a difference.
No.
The flowers as a part of a plant would eventually die anyway, but the plant would continue to live. And I've gotten you plants before, too. Whereas a tree itself begins as a plant. You could leave it planted.
Okay.
It can continue to grow
by itself.
It's
a nice try, but there are numerous flowers that are individually grown.
But I don't get
And once cut...
I don't get you perennials. I get you annuals. They grow, they die. They grow, they die.
You only buy me
annuals. They grow, they die. They're up, they're gone. They're in, they're out. They're like, hey,
wow,
what's up?
That was
Goodbye.
Quick. That was
Here
a quick
go.
Comeback. I'll give you that.
Thank you.
I'll anyway, we should move on.
But that's all. I mean, your arguments are good ones, but I'm just saying there's kind of an emotional thing I have about it. I don't necessarily know that I want to go out and kill a tree this Christmas. And yet I want a tree. I agree with you about that. We actually have a plant that we got from from IKEA that we were seriously thinking about making the Christmas plant.
No, like, you were seriously thinking of it. I thought it was funny, but I want a Christmas tree, Greg.
I was just thinking about this today.
This is the first time I'm in an apartment that's big enough.
I know.
And it doesn't feel like real Christmas when we could be having a tree there.
Can I get my mom's like artificial Christmas tree? Because she's got two.
No, I don't want an artificial tree.
But she's
I want to
got
smell
it, huh?
it. Oh my God.
I could spray it with Christmas tree scent. I could egg air fresheners.
Great, then I'll be allergic to it.
All right. Well, if you have any thoughts about this,
please let us know.
What do you want to rate Christmas trees as a concept in general, whether they be fake or real?
Right.
We would both agree that it's like, what, like a 9 out of 10? Like Christmas trees in general as an idea.
8.
8 because of environmental issues?
No, 8 because it still can divide people just as, you
know. It doesn't divide
us. Along religious lines.
Along religious lines. It's a religious conflict. Okay, so that's fair. So then we will say an 8 out of 10 for Christmas trees. Please weigh in with your thoughts on that subject. Okay, next up on the docket is The Daily Show.
The exciting news continues. There's a new UN Secretary General, folks. A new sheriff in town. Well, maybe not sheriff. Who's the guy that doesn't really solve disputes or help, really, but you have to have your documents stamped by him? Notary! That's it. That would be Ban Ki-moon of South Korea, whom the UN just swore in as its new Secretary General, replacing Kofi Annan. While he may not bring any more teeth to the United Nations, I do believe his name will bring the same comical joy to Americans. as his predecessors, from all-time champ Boutros-Ghali all the way down to Kurt Waldheim. Let's see where this guy ranks. I'm going to go with... Okay! Nice and done. Sillier than Javier Perez de Cuellar, not as silly as Utan. Once again, Bunky Moon. He's no Utan. And of course, he beat out the perennial UN runner-up, Doodle Von Taintstein. Really, just another black mark. Why do they think Americans are provincial? Why? Von Taintstein doesn't know.
This is the show that is currently hosted by Jon Stewart, who the comedian, and it was originally begun apparently 10 years ago. I didn't actually realize it, and then Clea pointed it out to me. And as we were thinking about it, it's true that 10 years ago when the show started, it was actually kind of a goofy Howard Stern-like show, which was being hosted by Craig Kilborn, who was this big ESPN anchor at the time, who then ended up fading. I think actually maybe he is still doing it. I think he's doing the late show like with Craig Kilborn or something. But anyway, so he hosted it. And then when Jon Stewart came on, and that was probably about maybe 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, something like that, the show radically changed focus. And so now The Daily Show has become this cutting-edge liberal political commentary on the news. And you can normally show it in America on the eastern on the East Coast. You can normally see it. I think it's around like what 10:30 or something like that.
It's 11
to 11:30. You can find it on the web at www.comedycentral.com/shows/the_daily_show.
And you know they actually do have quite a few little clips, videos from the show, so you can see it right on the website. The website's pretty great; it has a lot of stuff on it.
Yep.
And then obviously you could do what we do, which is you know TiVo it, where you can have it record it, and then you can watch it whenever you want to. Skip the commercials. My favorite thing is the opening segment and the second segment where they do some kind of like journalist going out and on a particular subject
with correspondents. In fact, some of them have had spin-off shows Stephen Colbert now has the Stephen Colbert Report, and he started on the Jon Stewart Show.
A lot of the people that originally did the correspondents have different shows, like What's His Face in The Office, and there's two guys actually that used to do it that are in the office now and that kind of stuff. But I just find it really funny, and I have to say, you know, all you conservative people, we love you, but you're going to roll your eyes at me right now. And that The Daily Show has pulled me through numerous hard times. One around September 11th, when I could not watch any normal news. It was just the fear mongering and the bias and it was too hard to take. And then obviously during the elections, and the outcomes of the elections, both in, 2000 and 2004, it really pulled me through.
Well, and I think part of that, I would make the argument, The Daily Show has had a significant impact, I would argue, on political culture in America.
Yeah.
Because they did a study that shows that a vast majority, did you see this? Something like 65% to 70% of voting age populace between the ages of like 18 and 25. Now, granted, that's not a very high block because those people don't vote. But first of all, though, 70% of those people get their news from The Daily Show, directly from that. Number two, that portion of the populace voted in record numbers, especially for a midterm election, this past election, and everybody knows what happened during that. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that Jon Stewart's, his brand, what he's done with The Daily Show is to make it, and I've heard conservatives talk about this again, he has conservative guests on there, he's had McCain, he's had other people come on there.
Guests.
Even conservatives who watch it have to admit, his brand of satire and comedy and sort of a piercing look at what's going on in Washington is so right on that it's almost staggering. Like he did this thing about a week ago, we did the Civil War show where he was having this discussion with a correspondent about whether or not you could call what was going on in Iraq a civil war.
Right.
And the correspondent's just like, well, look, John, I mean, seriously, you know, do we want to sort of wriggle over semantics? You know, I call it, you call it a civil war. I call it a conflict where many people have formed into recognizable sects that disagree with each other and are committed to armed violence. And John Stewart's like, like a civil war. He's like, semantics, John. Like, it's just, it's genius. It's so funny. Even if you don't agree with his political position, and we know that many of our beloved listeners who are right-wing, and we're glad you guys keep listening to us, that's great. You guys may not, I'm sure you won't agree with the political belief, but you at least have to agree that he's very good at the kind of stuff that he does. Right. It's not even like Michael Moore, the filmmaker, where you could feel like he's a little bit too sledgehammery.
Right, right.
Stewart is much more piercing. You know, he's much more... He's in a way, he's probably smarter. That's part of it. And so he's able to get into the inner workings of these deals. Yeah. So he also gets a lot of people to come on you wouldn't expect, by the way.
I mean,
like, all these people are like, well, I'm conservative. Sure, I'll come on. And he doesn't really badger them. But
there was this one time where he was like, our plan to become like the mouthpiece of the right is almost in place.
I know, exactly.
And he was like, well, I don't know how this is happening. But anyway,
it's working. And one other thing, he single-handedly brought down CNN's crossfire, and that itself was a work of beauty. If you guys haven't seen that, go Google it on YouTube.
Yeah.
When he went in and he took down that arrogant Tucker Carlson and the equally arrogant Paul Begala, I can't stand either one of them. And on that show, they kept trying to be like, "Why? Be funny." He's like, "No, you guys are ruining the news. You're ruining it." And they were like, "Be funny, haha." He's like, "No, you're ruining it." And finally, they got mad at him.
Yeah.
He's like, "Well, you can be mad at me, but you guys are doing a disservice." The next day, I'm not making this up. The next day, they're like, "Yeah, so we're gonna cancel it. This has nothing to do with John Stewart's appearance. We've decided not to renew the contract." So John Stewart, smart guy, obviously left of center, but I think the show's really good.
He's cute too.
And he's cute. Ladies, isn't he married?
Yes, unfortunately.
Oh, okay.
And actually, I think his wife magazine, his wife was voted like the top wife of a celebrity that people would like to be.
They'd like to be John Stewart's wife.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
How did he come up with these questions?
I don't know.
It is that, or it's
but
Arnold
I specifically
Schwarzenegger's
remember,
Marie Kennedy.
Which I would agree. Hugh Jackman would still have to be number one.
Oh,
his wife, and then John Stewart.
For different reasons. Vastly different reasons. Anyway, so what do you want to give The Daily Show?
Oh, God. I really want to give it a 10.
I think I'm going to give it a 9 because I think I have seen occasions where the show has faltered a little bit, although I think it's been on a pretty big roll.
I haven't seen that.
But I don't know about a 10. I would say that I would give it a 9. A 10 is really up there, hon.
Well, I see it as the opposite of the Iraq War. And the Iraq War was
Iraq was
zero.
A 0 and this is a 10? You realize this puts it up in such esteemed company as North Shore Animal League, right?
Yes, and I would completely agree because Lilo loves The Daily Show.
Okay, so we need to put Jon Stewart and the North Shore Animal League in a holy war against the war in Iraq and...
the war on drugs.
No, and HP, right? Customer service. Something like that. Okay, we're getting confused about all the shows we're doing. Okay. All right. Well, I will go along then, and I will say that we'll give The Daily Show a 10 out of 10. Again, if it's not your political thing, I understand, but please check it out. It's very funny.
It's also still funny.
It's funny regardless.
Yeah.
And it's worth your time. The last thing that we have on the docket for tonight for our podcast segment is the Light On, Light Through podcast by Paul Levinson. You can find this at www.lightonlightthrough, LightonLightThrough.com.
Battlestar Galactica. The joys of driving in my Prius with Bluetooth. The forces of light and darkness on Wikipedia. These are some of the topics I discuss in my weekly commentaries on LightOnLightThrough.com. I'm Paul Levinson. LightOnLightThrough.com.
And just very quick way of introduction, then I'll let Clea give her take on it. This guy is a very interesting guy. He's actually the chairman, I believe, of the Department of Communication and Media Studies at Fordham University, and he previously taught at a bunch of other places. He's got
including St. John's University, where Craig teaches.
That's right. And he was the president of the Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers of America.
Yeah.
Not that I'm trying to
publish
a book right now.
Which, of course, Greg is trying to.
And he was a big musician in the late 1960s. Not that my band has an album out.
Greg is trying to
make it in. So basically, we like to give this guy a 20 out of 10. And my number, Paul, you can find us at upon@sycophant.net. So this guy's a very, very interesting guy and has a lot of interesting things
to
say.
Quite the renaissance man.
Yeah, and we were sort of amazed. Like, the show we'll talk about, we had a couple of issues with, but then as we started finding out all these details, like, my God, this guy's done everything. Like, he's record producer, singer, all this kind of stuff, and he's won a bunch of awards for science fiction writing as well.
Right.
And I had definitely heard his name before. I just didn't realize that he had done this much different kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Also, from the Bronx. So, we appreciate that here as well.
You
So what's your opinion about the show, babe?
Oh, gosh.
Do you want to describe it, first of all, what it basically is?
So he has his introductory music. Then he introduces the subject. Then quite often he might introduce a musician or singer that he's found, mm-hmm. or that submitted their stuff to him. Mm-hmm. And then he'll play it. Then he will talk about, possibly will talk about responses he's gotten to previous podcasts. And then he will play a 8-minute long, I guess probably only like 2 or 3 minute long, but no, 8 minutes.
No, I mean, a couple of the episodes were like 7 minutes of promos.
Yeah. Well, promos of other podcasts.
Yeah.
You know, he seems very intelligent, very supportive of the people that send
him. What a
nice
guy.
Like, he's very nice. And
please let more professors be like this. I mean, I try to be nice like this to my students. Please be like this. If you're going to be like a professor, be this kind of professor. You know, yeah. I don't mean soft and, you know, easy.
No, he
I just mean give standards, but be
critiques of,
you know?
Of what it, about it, it that
yes.
he likes. He doesn't give any comments about what he doesn't like. So I don't know if he doesn't like it or he just doesn't recognize the things about it that suck.
Right.
But yeah. So that's a pretty much a layout, and he's covered numerous topics. I mean, everything from time travel to the daylight savings time to elections, elective media,
the Wire show?
Which I
don't know
which
about that show.
I've never heard about that show, but maybe it's some show. It's HBO show, but maybe it's in England or something.
I don't know. Maybe we have to get Russ back in and save because he did our Deadwood
thing. That's true. That's true. So that's kind of what it's about. And it's usually about, would you say, 15 to 20, 25 minutes?
Yeah, I'd say 20 on the outside, normally 15 to 20. Although, of that, the amount that he's speaking, maybe 7 or 6. And that's one of the concerns that I have. Okay, well, so first of all...
So now the concerns.
No. Let's the good stuff, first of all. Besides the fact he's a nice guy, he's clearly intelligent, interesting career. That interest and intelligence and everything else comes through in the
right.
show. And I think that there are times when the topics that he's talking about really have the potential to be very interesting.
Right.
I also think that in a way, part of the problem with the show is there isn't enough of him.
Right.
Because he'll start talking about things and you're like, oh, this is cool. And then he'll say, and now for random music. And then all of a sudden he throws something in. Now, having seen his background, I now understand why he's so into the music. And obviously I myself, as much into music as I am, love it as well. But it seems like contextually it doesn't make sense to me as to how he's arranging things other than just, wow, this is really neat. And
he can't do that with the sacrifice of the topic of the episode.
Exactly. So that, for example, his topic for the November 25th show was every eye's a camera, every ear's a mic. And his point was, going into it apparently, that we've all been given these cell phones now. We all have these cell phones. All these cell phones have camera capability. A lot of them have video capability. And so you can do things like the whole Michael Richards thing from a couple of weeks ago where he had that racist rant in L.A., and things like that can be picked up by a person with a cell phone. And so what are the implications of that?
Right.
Now, that's really interesting, but he really only spends maybe 3.5 minutes talking about it. And then all of a sudden we've got some song and then we've got tons of promo, you know, promo podcast minutes. And that really leads me to the big complaint I have about the show, which is this has both the best and the worst of podcasting. The best in that podcasting reflects the spirit and personality of people you wouldn't otherwise get to know, and to that degree, it's very useful. I would like to hear more from this guy. I'd like to hear more from him about how to get published and how to get my music published. This guy's got a lot of interesting things to say. The bad is that podcasting has a tendency to become so insular, and we've talked about that in the show before, that all that happens is you end up having everybody promoting each other.
Right.
I mean, literally, 15 minutes and 7.5 or 8 minutes of it is promos. If I want to listen to those people, I'll go listen to them. I appreciate he wants to sort of say, hey, if you haven't, but most people aren't going to come to him first, and if, you know, they'll have found him some other way.
Right.
And if they do come to him first, they are not going to want to listen. Like I was saying to Cleo over dinner when we were talking about this, if I wanted to introduce somebody who'd never done podcasting before, the way I would not do it is by showing them podcast where a guy starts talking about something for like 3 minutes, they start getting interested, then he cuts it off, plays loud music, we'll get to that loud part in a second, and then says, okay, and now here's tons of promos, and then they have to listen to 8 minutes of promos. I mean, that is not going to attract anybody but the person who has a intense interest in podcasting to begin with.
Right.
And that's not who he should be reaching out with. This guy is so interesting that, you know, potentially, that he should be reaching out to everybody, not just podcasters. And so I really think the show has to be changed in that regard to reflect that.
I also think that he keeps talking about the people that leave messages or send him things about the show.
Right.
And in many respects, I can't help but feel they're doing it just to say, okay, now please play my promo.
I agree.
And I'm sure that he's aware of that. He's intelligent, but I can't help but feel, you know what?
You wonder if he's not being taken advantage of a little bit. Because when people are kind enough to leave comments for us, they don't do that with any expectation. Like, Ask Lyndon, even, when they did that promo for us, I mean, they were nice enough to do this thing where, and yeah, it also promotes their show, but they also genuinely wanted to know our review of the show. And we know that when you review a show, that they're also going to get, you know, publicity from it, but that's not the principal reason that you guys contribute to what we do. You're interested in the discussion, we hope. And it seems here that he may be getting taken advantage of a little bit, which I think is a shame.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, just even like that one woman that left a message. I mean, half the whole first half of it was describing who she is and what she does. And then she was like, oh, and thank you for playing my music and your support. And I'm like,
yeah, it's like, and do you even listen to his show?
I mean, she was like, she was reading it.
Yeah.
She was reading her message
so,
that she had, like, written.
And it's not that, you know, Paul can't handle him, if I can call you Paul. It's not that Paul can't handle him, Dr. Levinson. It's not that Dr. Levinson can't handle himself. It's that I just think that he may be new enough to this particular medium that, you know, as we said, podcasters are a wonderful, kind, supportive community, but there are also a lot of super self-promoters. That's part of the business, I guess. And so much so that I wonder if they're not being taken advantage of a little bit. So,
yeah, and that's not my concern. My concern is purely, I don't want to hear a lot of people self-promoting.
I want to hear
him. And I don't want to hear you promoting a lot of other people.
Right.
I want to hear you.
I want to hear his show.
What you have to say.
Right.
That was my issue.
If you want to come up with like one a show, that's one thing. You want to come up with, you know, 12 minutes or whatever it was, that 8-minute promo? No, no. That's way too
much. Especially because there are a few of them that he plays every time. Or
that's
at least everyone that I heard.
Sure.
And I don't want to hear the same promo every time.
And even if he's doing that to try to get, but that's, again, if he's trying to do it to get promoted somewhere else, that's why we don't play promos on our show. We review you because we think that, you know, you submitted for review and we give you an honest and fair review, not because we expect a quid pro quo. So the other problem as a technical level, and this is a problem even up to the last episode, he has to find a way to get a leveler. We do our leveling, our volume leveling through Audacity. I could tell as I was listening to the show that he used Cast Blaster or something similar where he'd be, you know, playing a clip and then he'd cut out. But seriously, it blew out my car speakers practically on the way home from work because you had to turn way up to hear his voice, which is pleasant. You know, his voice is fine. And then you hear, you know, and here's some music. Blah, 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 blah. And then it starts, it blows out your ears. And Clea said it nearly did the same thing on her earphones.
Not only that,
you've got to normalize the level so it doesn't do that or it's really going to turn listeners off.
Each promo was at a different level.
Right. That's
true. So I'm listening on my iPod equivalent.
With riding the
and
volume
I
thing.
Had to totally ride the volume thing.
Yeah, so that's a real killer. That's got to be fixed. And it's easy to do. I mean, you can use the Levelator, which you can find online. You can do it through Audacity. But the levels have to be fixed because otherwise you're really going to turn off a bunch of listeners as well. You know, the key is how many more people do you want to listen to your show? And we get the impression a lot more people he wants. So assuming that's true, then you got to make it, you know, more accessible in those ways.
Right.
This is going to be a little hard to rate for all those reasons, I think. I mean, what's your take on the rating that you would say for a show like this?
It's tough, though, because he didn't really delve into the subject as much as I would like, and also because I felt him boring in a lot of respects, if not reading off what he was saying.
But that, too, I think is related to the whole, I'm podcasting, so I have to do this, don't you think?
Maybe.
I don't think it was him that was boring. I thought it was the way in which he was, the medium that he's functioning under, what
That's
he thought
fine.
He had to do.
Well, no, you know? Of course, he's not boring. I mean, you just have to take a look at his interests and, I mean, obviously he's not a boring individual. I'm just saying I found him boring because of the way he was doing it.
Because the way he was presenting it. So, I don't know, maybe shaking up the order of it a little bit, maybe, you know, arrange, not having to play, always do his little thing, then music, then
lots
of promo
podcasts. Yeah, I mean, I think we've given plenty of, you know, very concrete critiques that he could change
if he wants to. Sure. What do you think for a rating?
Oh god, I want to give it like a 3 or a 4.
Oh wow, I don't know that I would give it that. I would probably give it like a I would probably give it a 5, because I think my view is that it's right in the middle. I think the potential makes it in the 5 level, but I think that the level problems and
what's the purpose of this podcast?
This podcast?
Yeah.
I think a lot of it is to promote what he's doing, his projects. I think, you know, his novel that he's got out, which is called The Plot to Save Socrates.
Oh, so the whole thing really is kind of like self-promotion.
Nah,
oh, I was on O'Reilly.
It's a combination of audio, like sort of, it's a combination of an audio blog, I think. It's a combination of commentary and promotion. I think it's all of those things.
Well, then, yeah. Then I guess a 5, yeah.
I think in those
sense
is a 5.
Because that's what it is.
Yeah. I mean, that's, and that basically does that. But you know, it could be a whole lot better if some of these things were attended to. And so, you know, we find Dr. Levinson is a very impressive guy, but we think the podcast needs a little bit of work in these areas. And if that can be done, then I think it could really improve it in our judgment. So, so 5 out of 10 for Light On, Light Through. Okay, well, that is going to do it for us for this week. Again, thanks to everyone for feedback and submissions and all that wonderful good stuff. Don't forget to contribute to our poll, which I'm now going to have to quickly come up with.
Right, and please vote for me because I really want a tree.
Well, and I don't know.
And Greg's just being a dork.
No, I'm not. Please vote for... I don't know if you should vote for me. Please just resolve my problem. If there's like an artificial, real artificial tree hybrid, please let me know because clearly hedging my bets is important. Get it? Hedging?
It's just take a hit. Greg.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
All right. So until next week with episode 28 for episode 27 of Upon Further Review, I'm Greg.
I'm Clea.
Have a good one.
The proceeding was a presentation of Upon Further Review, hosted at www.furtherreview.net. As usual, all rights are reserved. If you liked what you heard, please vote for us at podcastalley.com, vitalpodcast.com, and add us to your list of favorites at podcastpickle.com. You can leave us a comment at www.furtherreview.net, drop us a line at upon@furtherreview.net, or give us a phone call or send a fax to 206-339-UFR1. That's 206-339-8371. And lastly, don't be afraid to express your opinions. We know you have them. Let them out. Feel the power. Or you could just blindly accept whatever we tell you is fact. That'll work.
Bravo!
I loved that.
Oh, it was great.
Well, it was pretty good.
Well, it wasn't bad.
Well, there were parts of it that weren't very good, though.
It could have been a lot better.
I didn't really like it.
It was pretty terrible.
It was bad.
It was awful.
I was terrible.
Get him away!
Hey, boo!
Boo!